In this podcast, I will be having conversations about where our experience of life comes from. My goal is to support GPs in the overwhelming job that they do. The good news is that you can hang up your superhero cape and let go of needing to be everything to everyone. You're listening to a spin-off series called The Clinical Director's Cut, where I chat with inspiring PCN clinical directors about where their inspiration came from and how they're making a positive difference to their network and to their population. Today, I'm talking to Dr. Rupa Joshi, a GP in Wokingham who is also a co-clinical director of Wokingham North PCN, as well as a valued colleague of mine in the primary care transformation team.
Yeah. So, hi, Rupa. It's great to see you this morning.
And, Thank you for inviting me, Jo.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure. And I'm really enjoying speaking to some clinical directors in this kind of mini series of podcasts that I've started and hearing, you know, how things are for you, what's exciting, what's challenging, and what's really rewarding about the role. And I wondered if you could tell our listeners how you came to be a clinical director of a PCN in the first place.
Yes, thanks, Jo. So really, it was back in 2017, I was thinking that, you know, we were rushed off our feet. We were going from morning surgery straight into afternoon surgery, doing visits, and it was getting really, really busy. And I could see that there was a lot of burnout going on, not just locally, but really, you know, across that. It was a national thing, wasn't it? Things were getting busy, patients, more comorbidities, more demands. And, you know, I just really decided that actually that the cavalry wasn't coming. And if we wanted to do something, we had to change what we were doing in the surgery. And I managed to persuade four other surgeries to start a paramedic home visiting service. And we all worked, this was pre-PCNs, we worked together. It was the first time that we'd, you know, really got round a table and started doing something together. And so the five of us recruited a paramedic. We managed to get some funding. And we worked together, and it was really to have a tiny break in the middle of the day so that you could actually eat lunch, you could talk to colleagues. And that's where it really started, the improvement journey, that I decided that it's up to us to do something to change the narrative. You know, we can't go on like this. So, one of the neighbouring GPs actually said to me that if we didn't have the paramedic home visiting service, they would have left. They would have left the profession. So I then knew, actually, we're doing something really worthwhile. We're doing something good. We're keeping staff happy. We're keeping the staff satisfaction high. And it wasn't really just the staff. You know, the patients were really happy. And the reception staff were really happy. They could, you know, talk about people being admitted to hospital earlier, so the hospital were happy. So all over, it was better patient care, better patient journeys, and that's when I realized actually I can make a difference, and with the help of, you know, the General Practice Improvement Leaders Program, through the primary care transformation team, I went on that and I learned new skills. I learned more quality improvement methodology, how to change things in a sustainable way, that the change would actually be embedded and sustainable. So I started doing more projects, and then the primary care network clinical director was really then the ideal stepping stone, because I then decided that actually, you know, there is a lot that we can do to make primary care, general practice, more enjoyable and bring that joy back into what we're doing. And that's kind of my journey of how I first got into it. And it was that confidence, actually, that you know, I'd always thought, oh, somebody else could do that kind of role, you know, people that were in the CCG or people that were in leadership positions. But that's when it kind of hit me that actually anybody can go into a leadership position. They just need that why. They just need that sense of, why am I doing this? What's the purpose? And I realized that, you know, I could do it as well. So that was when I stepped into the role.
Wow. And you'd really demonstrated back in 2017, hadn't you, that you're a clinical leader by persuading your colleagues in other practices to be involved in the paramedic home visiting scheme. So, yeah, I can see how that kind of naturally flowed, and especially with the extra added inspiration of the GPIL program.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was a really good opportunity to meet other people in the same position. And I heard all sorts of innovation, you know, what other people are doing for their projects on the course.
It's more an observation, Rupa, about your leadership journey from, you know, that initial project and getting other people on board, other colleagues and other practices on board with the paramedic visiting service, and then going through GPIL and the inspiration of that program. And you were talking about hearing about other people's projects and being inspired by those.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that there were two projects that really stood out for me. One of them was about around a frailty team. And it's really interesting, isn't it? So, you know, back at that kind of time, we were talking about all these innovations, and now, you know, through the Fuller and the changes of working together and collaborating, so that's all kind of coming through now. And the other one was an acute care team system that we then implemented in the practice, about using a team of healthcare professionals, using the ARS staff as they are now, but recruiting into kind of physicians associates and paramedics, and using a team for the on-the-day approach, and then having your long-term condition management as a separate stream within the practice. So we started that as well, which has on, you know, been working really, really well for us.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds absolutely amazing, actually, Rupa. Yeah. So even before you became a PCN, you started with these projects with what were to become the additional roles.
Absolutely, yes. And I think having worked in a multidisciplinary team already, it was, you know, such a good stepping stone into then, you know, year one of PCNs was about social prescribing link workers. It was about pharmacists, and really, you know, getting on board with that. And we could see the benefits. We could see having that multidisciplinary approach, using different skill sets, and really valuing the skill sets, and having a place, and having that sense of belonging and value, was really important as the first step of PCNs.
Yeah. And was that just within your practice, or were there other practices within your new emerging PCN involved in projects like this? I mean, apart from the visiting service.
I think we started off really with a workflow optimization across the PCN, and looking at things like active signposting and making sure that the patient gets to the right clinician the first time. So yes, I think that's been something that, particularly the workflow optimization, was a really good way to start, understanding that actually the clinician doesn't need to be on Docman for an hour a day or 45 minutes a day, and upskilling members of staff and giving everybody that staff satisfaction. And we also started group consultations at that time as well, in 2018, which was, you know, a really wonderful opportunity for me, because we've evolved that, and we're still doing them now, and they're working really well. Our patients are really happy, and we get really good feedback, and that's spread across the PCN as time's gone on as well.
Brilliant. So you've actually been able to implement projects which gave your GPs across the PCN a sense of how much life could improve for them early in the project, really, and get them on board.
Yes, and I think the paramedic home visiting was a real eye-opening moment of, you know, we can work together. You know, as time's gone on, now we've got a health and wellbeing team with health coaches, social prescribers, mental health practitioners, care coordinators. We've got a pharmacy team with a supervising pharmacists and pharmacy technicians and pharmacists across the PCN. I think it's really taking on board all the ideas from all the GPs and all the practices and all the nurses and all the staff, really, of how do we improve things and what's our next steps. And I think really interestingly, we've come up to the conclusion that actually people do need you know, their own time, their own development time. It doesn't have to always be 100% of the time is based on patient. You know, we've come to the conclusion as a collective that we'll block off slots so that people can then supervise each other. You can empower the team to learn for themselves. And it's not just about us working, it's about us empowering others to feel confident in their own abilities and their own work ethics.
That's fabulous. Yeah.
A big step.
Yeah. So I imagine that's really rewarding for all of you, actually.
Yeah. I feel much happier with my working day compared to what I was doing before. You know, I feel a real good mix of supervising people, doing on the day demand, doing long-term condition management. And it is lovely, you know, having gone through the pandemic and, you know, to do that face-to-face comorbidity reviews and feeling that you're actually doing what you were trained to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's brilliant. And have you had any kind of challenges with any of your practices in terms of reluctance to be part of the PCN and being very aware of their autonomy as a practice?
We started off as 5 practices and we've gone down to 3 practices.
Oh.
And it was really because it's the direction that you want to go to. Mm-hmm. And we realized after doing a lot of listening exercises and discussions over a period of time that 2 practices wanted different things from being in a PCN to what the 3 practices wanted. So, we have gone our own separate ways, but, you know, we're very amicable and it's just the way things go. And I don't think that, you've got to stick to what you really want to do. And sometimes finding a shared purpose doesn't always work. And people have different purposes. Each practice has a different culture. And it does come with its own challenges to try and get 5 different cultures into one, you know, unique vision. But it doesn't always go like that. So you've got to do what's best for your practice staff, for your patients, and go the direction that you want to go.
And it sounds like you've managed to do that really well.
Yeah.
Because it is a balancing act, isn't it? You're always going to be, as far as we can see, the individual practice. But with kind of overlapping purpose with the other practices who are now in your network.
And, you know, each practice, as I said, you know, has its own culture, it has its own diversity, it has its own different ways of doing things. And you've got to respect that as a PCN leader. You've got to try and encompass the learnings of all the practices within your PCN and take the best practice and spread it to all the other practices.
And it sounds as though actually one of the key things that you do that keeps everything together is listening to your colleagues.
I think we're really fortunate in our PCN that I share my role with my co-CD, and that works really well because you've always got somebody to bounce ideas off, and you've always got somebody to, you know, if you can't make a meeting, then they can go and you can discuss it afterwards, which is really helpful because it is a huge job. And I think we've always valued that. And, you know, I might take on a different piece of work and he might take on a different piece of work. So having that knowledge between us is really helpful. And we've also we have a PCN manager, and we also have a transformation manager who's been incredibly helpful and is our workforce support lead. And so her role is really to make sure that we've got the induction processes right, doing all the appraisals for all our staff and being the first port of call. So if there's something that's not quite going well, we've got that early response and we can put things right from a very early early point, and really embedding the staff, making sure that they feel that sense of belonging and they have their autonomy and they feel valued. So that's been a really good, learning for PCNs to have somebody in that post who's working as that transformation lead.
Great. Yeah, that is quite an innovation, really, isn't it? And it sounds like you had your transformation lead long before we started talking about digital and transformation leads. Yeah.
So we're also looking at that, and our digital and transformation lead, I think, is going to be starting next month.
Wow.
But, you know, we want to use them more on the digital side and really optimize the engagement with patients, social media and online consultations. There's so much they can do, the advanced telephony, and we've got lots and lots of projects in the pipeline for the D&T lead.
Gosh, so it sounds like it's a really exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, in terms of looking at the working and integrating with our neighbourhoods, we're really looking at the health inequality side as well, and looking through health checks within the communities. And as part of our PHM data, we realised that our prevalence for depression in our Black community was a lot lower than our other communities. So we're really looking at engaging with our Black community now and encouraging people to come forward and making it more approachable for all our communities, and doing more outreach as well.
Wow. So lots of opportunity to improve your population health.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I think looking at your PHM data, it's about looking at the data, but also looking where the gaps are.
Yeah.
You know, who's not coming to see you? And is there something more that we can do to reach out to people?
And then, did you find any specific obstructions to your Black community actually engaging with you?
I mean, not specifically. We've been looking at the data, and we're really, doing things with the council and the public health teams, to go and do outreach within community centres and community hubs, and finding healthcare champions who we can train up in mental health first aiders, so that we've got people in the community that people can approach to start with, who can then, bring them to us if needed, or we could go out to them. So we're in the process of working with our communities to train up some of the first aiders. And we're looking at, a video just explaining what we do and what our services are, and our health and wellbeing team and our mental health practitioners, our SMI health workers. So really giving people in the community an idea of what services are available and how accessible they are and how to come and approach us.
Great. That is just fantastic. So you're doing so much, aren't you?
Like you said, Joe, yeah, absolutely exciting times. Every PCN is going to be different for what the needs are. So it's finding out about what the needs are within your particular population and then working with your communities to co-design services. But I think really they need to come from the communities themselves. What is it that you need us to help you with?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that really strikes me here is that we hear so much doom and gloom from our colleagues in primary care. And so many of them are really, suffering a lot, working so hard and really, to the point of overwhelm and burnout. And yet, within your practice and your PCN, you seem to have moved beyond that.
It's been, we've had a really difficult time with recruitment, and we seem to have turned a corner, which has been fabulous. And we've managed to recruit quite a few new doctors in the last few months. And I think it's word of mouth, you know, the word of mouth have spread that people want to work with us now. They've got to know what we're doing. We've had some trainees in our practice spread the word on our behalf, which has been really, really fortunate. And then we've continued to really maximize on our ARS spend as well. So we feel that we are better staffed than we were. It was a really difficult time and we were all absolutely exhausted. You know, coming out of the pandemic, when demand was rising. But I'm really, really grateful and thankful that we've managed to recruit some doctors to come and work with us. And they're wonderful people, really dedicated. So we've been really lucky with the doctors and the other staff and the clinicians that have come in to work with us.
I would say it's more than luck, Rupa, to be honest, because you've clearly set that culture within the practice and within the PCN that, you know, when your trainees are enjoying their work so much that they're spreading the word, that is a really good sign. I'm really inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you, Jo.
Well, great. So I'm hoping that other, you know, PCN clinical directors listening to this can be inspired as well by what you're doing in terms of turning things around in their own areas.
Thank you. And thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Have you got a couple more minutes?
Oh, yeah, sure. Sorry, I thought the way that you were saying you were...
Oh, right.
All right, yes, I have. I've got time.
So the other thing I've wondered really, Rupert, is you mentioned that your OCD, you know, is a really good person to have around. You obviously have a mutually supportive arrangement there. But I wondered what other support has made it possible and easier to operate in this role.
So we do have a local group of a Berkshire West PCN clinical directors, which is really good for talking about local issues. But really, the NHS Confederation, when I first started off, I joined them in 2019 as part of the Primary Care Network Clinical Directors Group, a national group. And then it's now evolved into a primary care network rather than a PCN network, a primary care network group. And I'm on the national advisory group for that, and I chair the workforce and estates group for them. And, you know, I don't think I'd be where I am without that group of CDs. They were really, really supportive. You know, when times are tough and we shared lots of ideas, we talk pretty much, you know, once a week, or and we have our own WhatsApp group where we can really get ideas. So I would say that if you are a PCN CD, it's really worth joining the NHS Confederation for that support network. And another thing that I find really helpful about them is, you know, whatever documents come out from NHS England, they're all summarized, so you can have the summary sheets within your meetings and talk it through. And there's lots of webinars and resources there as well. So I'd say that has been a really great support for me.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Yeah, so well worth joining Confed then, not just for the conference. She's always a good jolly, really, isn't it? Yeah, that's great to hear. Thanks, Rupa. Because I was just going to ask you another couple of things. I mean, one of them being, what would you say to a GP colleague who was considering taking on the role of CD in another primary care network?
I would say it is really hard work. There are times when you think, you know, I'm doing all this work. It's a bit of a thankless task, to be honest. And people are really, really busy, and particularly practice managers are really busy, and other doctors are really busy. So sometimes you sort of feel that you're doing a lot of work, but you can't get people to engage. So, you know, but what I would say is keep going. You will get there in the end. And it's like they say, isn't it, is when you say something over and over again to the point where people are saying, yeah, yeah, I've got that now, that means they've got it. So, yeah, keep going. And your enthusiasm and your ability to make change and to help patients, to help the staff, it will filter through. But it is a really, really worthwhile role. It's really rewarding. And you get to really find out about the challenges that your colleagues are facing and do something to help. So, yeah, I'd say definitely take it on. And you will find it a really rewarding role in the end, but it does take a while to get there.
Thank you. That's lovely, Rupert. What do you think your legacy will be as a clinical director?
I think really the outcomes of the projects that we've done for the PCN and the help that the new embedded staff have made a difference to the rest of the clinicians, such as things like, you know, taking over the some of the repeat prescribing, the QOF targets, the IIF, you know, those kind of things, to be able to help really hardworking practices reach some of those targets from the PCN DES. And a lot of the satisfaction and the kind remarks from the patients and how we've helped them. So, for example, the menopause evenings that we run every fortnight, you know, we've had excellent feedback from patients for those and the mindfulness courses that we're doing at the moment. So, yeah, lots to take away, but really, really proud of how well the teams work together.
Fantastic, Rupert. Thank you so much for spending the time to talk to me today.